Ayla and Honorable Mungoni. Are there any other apologies? There's also an apology from Mandy Strata-Sela. I don't know her position. She apologized telephonically. Are there any apologies? I don't see objective. What's objective, Dre? Okay, I thought maybe you apologize on his behalf. You are all welcome. Honorable Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman and members. Out there without any waste of time, and over to the DG to lead us and give the report.
DG, over to you, and also I would like to welcome the Office of the Auditor General. You are welcome. Thank you very much for coming. DG.
Thank you for the opportunity to have a comment on the progress practices.
You can't hear, the system is not.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the strategy that the department is adopting against fraud and corruption and the progress so far in this regard. The presentation there will cover to the broad reduction, reference to the turnaround studies to bring the conduct, the actions we are taking to fight corruption and fraud, and in particular, I think we will take through the committee, through the main aspects of our fraud prevention strategy as it is being implemented and unfolding. Stakeholders that are playing a role within the PW, matters about that went to the whistleblowing activity. Then we also will deal with the internal investigation, ongoing awareness campaign, the statistics that lead to success, the challenge, and then we will deal with challenges and propose solutions as we go forward. You will recall, Chair, that there was a presentation of fraud on the Department of Strategy last year on fraud and corruption. It was presented in August. What we'll be presenting is also incorporates up and improvements and changes on the strategy. You recall that there were challenges that were highlighted, which are still relevant today, which related to areas of an ability to have control state property, largely the property and some of those weaknesses actually contribute to the government that faces the space for people for the occurrence of corruption and fraud. The mismanagement of cases, generally the negative publicity that related to some of the key cases that are published across international media. There were also adverse reports that came from Chapter 9 institutions, that is the public, public potential around some of the issues. The AG, which issued claimers for both the vote as well as the property management training entity. And then the issues of unsatisfactory processes rendered to clients, widespread acting in critical competitive positions, which have now been done. I think this is just really beyond the general strategy that has been another point. Two key areas, and some, and then they also have sub items which are the core projects that you have developed under this strategy. The main tenets of the strategy is fighting for corruption as the first priority, and then improving business process operational performance in an integrated approach, which entails largely review of all internal control environment in the department, strengthening that, creating efficiency, and also providing for the ability to have a good environment. And then detection intervention, which included, for example, the things that we, the project that we embarked upon on audit of police station. We have identified, this is a key focus area, we have a project qualified for our key focus area project as part of the criminal strategy. There is a charter that has been adopted for what we will be doing with regard to all of this. High level project plan that was developed and is being implemented. We've got our anti-fraud, corruption and honest communication strategy, which has been adopted by the project team and is coming to ask for adoption and then for approval and then to be rolled out within the organization. I think one of the key areas we identified in the current structural weaknesses was that there isn't enough capacity to deal extensively with the extent which we have these problems that lead to fraud. I think in our case, having been targeted from within and as well as outside, we need to have a dedicated focus to the visibility. And currently, we've been undertaking this almost as project managers of project of investigation undertaken, largely from outsourced service providers as well as the FIU to determine the substance. What we're doing now is to in the process of looking at the appropriate structure and making sure that we start to build internal capacity that we can sustain our ability to deal with these things as and when they occur. I think one of the weaknesses that allows the growth of the culture of corruption is that if you have investigations that will take 3 or 4 years, the benefits sometimes exceed the risk that people will face. And if these things are acted upon 5 to 6, 7 years later, at which stage issues of evidence may be challenged, etc. So I think what is important is that their capability, once something happens, it gets immediately attacked and they're able to take decisive action and act on those as quickly as possible. Our fraud awareness is directly aligned to the major areas of our business and the project in terms of the general strategy. We are targeting the outcomes of the audit of leases, the outcomes of the twin audit, the lead discovered areas that we need to attack in terms of fraud, and then they're also targeting the areas of supply chain management, review of outcomes where we pick up problems, and then follow up on those. Governance and performance management review. And generally, we'll make sure that this is part of our service delivery improvement plan as we are currently embarking on that project. The FIU has been given investigations in terms of the proclamation to the end of the day. In that regard, Chair, there are about 24 cases where there are officials and contractors that are involved that are being investigated. Out of the sum of the determination for about 7 civil matters and about 8 criminal cases that have emanated from those investigations. The general strategy, we then provided funding for SIU to continue with this month's extra mandate. The act independent of us. They provide us with reports. They do quite a good job, although it takes quite a long time for them to conclude. And in most of the cases, when you finally have your case, it is solid, it's got all the evidence necessary for you to be able to take matters forward. But it is painfully slow, and in our environment, we would want it to be a little fast. As you will see, where there have been findings, we take stern action against particularly senior officials within the department, but generally everybody, including their partners in the criminal activities, whether from within or from outside.
market.
So these are the aspects that are being handled by the FIU. I've summarized them high level during the discussion. I would assume that in certain cases we'll be able to give much more detail with regard to each of the different numbers. And I'm providing a full report that covers things that may have been made brought to the attention of the committee. You will recall there's a list of them and such landlords, such for the South African police, and also with regards to a landlord, which you are all aware of. And the dispute is the validity of the agreement now put into four courts for a judicial review, and we are waiting the court date and finalization of this matter. There was, I think, related to that is the issue of unpaid rental to landlord, and all those matters are dealt with in the court. I think you will have been aware, honorable members, that last week we were given matter that related to auctioning of the property involved, which apparently was bought by the bank. Because they had that building as a joint for the loan they may have advanced to the bank involved. The suspension of a former director general on various charges of financial misconduct. I think Minister reported on this matter previously that the matter was settled because legal advice indicated that there wasn't quite, there was no substance in the matter against that particular decision court, and it involved the cases that are related. You are aware of the former acting DG who has been found guilty in internal disciplinary hearing and dismissed. Currently, he has a dispute according to the public service processes. So the case itself substantively is dealt with because there's a dismissal, appeals are obviously processes that follow. So there are also a case of a senior official in the Pretoria Regional Office who has been charged for financial misconduct in awarding of the lease, failure to disclose private interest in awarding of the lease contract. He's undergone a disciplinary process, which has been substantively concluded, and that we are waiting for the outcome of the presiding officer to determine what would be the final finding. The former DPG for failure to disclose private deals, benefits received and influencing appointment of service providers. He went through a disciplinary process which was concluded and he was found guilty and dismissed. We have now registered a criminal case against us in order to follow the matter up to its logical conclusion. And that process will take its course. Two SCM officials in the joint division charged for corruption in order to have run leases. One of the officials resigned to the process before any conclusion of resigned before it is not process could be taken. And the other one went through the process, found guilty, dismissed, then in pursuit criminally. Together with the landlord, indications of that they were already before they have been arrested and put through are now going through the criminal process. Further details will be provided during the discussion time if necessary. Honorable members, you'll be aware that the former CFO who was part of overseeing from a financial perspective, financial management of the department was charged for financial misconduct and the matters relating to the problems that became outcomes of audit reports of the past 3 years.
His departure was negotiated with her in the interest of service delivery for the department, and she departed. I think the minister made provided that was at a certain time to Parliament, I think at proper. There were problems with six lease agreements in the Johannesburg region, which were not occupied. I think they led to the cases above. We're looking at the validation of those agreements and recovery of the damages, and summons in this regard have been issued against the landlord for recovery of about 28 million involved in that. In the case of DBW versus Majestic, which is a matter in court, relates to invalid disagreements, fraud, and funding. The application was filed with court, declared the list invalid. Criminal case of fraud was also filed with SAPS, and those processes are underway in those institutions. There was a case of a DBW official who we charged for destruction of documents, seeking to conceal evidence, and irregular involvement in awarding of leases, That official was suspended. A hearing has been concluded. A criminal case of fraud and corruption has been registered. Each unit officials who have been charged for irregular appointment of contractors, authorizing valid invoices. Disciplinary hearing is expected to take place during September, pending, because most of the time at the date there are bills, there are challenges, and then things get moved. We are registering two criminal cases that relate to this matter. Scalpatek board opposed, and this relates to a formatting director general. And the issues involved are relates to irregular payment of settlement of contractors, conflict of interest and corruption. Because that former ADG is no longer in the department, we could only pursue other routes other than discipline. Someone's issued against DG, former acting DG, and the contract for recovery, and criminal case has been registered on fraud and corruption, and that we are awaiting the court processes to unfold in that regard. There's a case of conflict of interest relating to about four officials who were found to be irregularly doing business with the department. There were determinations of four written warnings which have not, a process has not been concluded, but they were issued with four written warnings. I think there may be appeals, etc. We are waiting for the process, but we'll explain. Mr. Marcelo will provide further details related to that. There are cases in Canada that relate to water deflage, relating fraudulent claims on delivery of water deflage. There are eight criminal cases registered against service providers and an official in the region. Autumn Star, this is an allegation of Autumn Star, which relates to an official, and the case is an allegation of corruption that related to that official. There's a charge sheet that has been developed and finalized. That is the cases that relate to the SIA. Generally, I would then continue with indicating what are the measures that we are putting in place that relate to the fraud and corruption within the department, and we'll go to the internal cases. I think I've already related largely to this particular issue in my introduction. What we have done is, as other measures that we have put in place, we have improved our interaction with the Auditor General. deal with matters that come out of the audit, particularly that relates to the to finding and then take them forward to the logical conclusions of those processes, particularly those that relate to fraud and corruption. We are in direction in cases that have gone to the public protector. Currently, we are in discussion with the National Treasury on how they can assist with the unit that they've created in that environment that is handling complicated cases of fraud and corruption other than those that were to go to the FIUs and other investigators. I think I've had two discussions with them, and their case, we want to refer some of the cases to them, because my assessment of the cases that dealt with for other government departments seem to suggest that they are a little bit further than the other agencies. Be that, I must make caution, they handle specific cases, there may be issue of the number of cases that they handle compared to the SIU. But I think the serious cases that we discover now, that cannot wait until proclamations are made, then we will refer those to them as we improve on our internal capacity. We have also undertaken a number of internal investigations through our unit that is mandated to promote a culture of anti-fraud and corruption within the department. I think as was referred to in the APP last week, they run fraud in the current year. There are plans to run fraud awareness investigations within the department through the fraud awareness and investigation directorate. I think in the first quarter they managed to do one, and I indicated with reasons, and then then how they will proceed going forward into improving the work in this regard. It is mandated with the promotion of anti-fraud corruption campaigns within the department, and then conduct the investigations on reported allegations and the summary of some reports that come out of this that I will deal with later in the presentation. I think they deal with issues of anti-fraud and corruption workshops, awareness campaigns, do investigation, and then in some cases they are the agencies that we use to refer cases to other law enforcement agencies such as FIU, SAPS and NIA, where they are definitive actions that are required to conclude the cases. They are the part that is helping us with managing the fraud prevention strategy and its report and requirements in terms of the PFMA. In that regard, they do regular annual reviews of the strategy as required in terms of law. We have an approved fraud prevention strategy, which is being rolled out for the current year in the department. The strategy deals with basic fraud and corruption prevention measures, which are already in place in the department. We have furthermore identified fraud and corruption risks that must be addressed and which could jeopardize the successful implementation of our prevention strategy and achievement of our goals in the department. And this in the current year, I think, has been informed by the turnaround strategy that has been implemented and is aligned with that strategy. It involves as we make changes and improvements in our drive to promote good governance and accountability in the department. We are continuously reviewing it because I indicated that these activities in a department like ours can't be cast in stone. As we discover things, we must review and make sure that we have proper responses to the challenges that we are facing in the department. The strategy, however, itself does not guarantee, but at least it provides us with the ability to create an environment that discourages, that finds, that acts against cases of of corruption as we deal with matters of detecting, dealing with the appropriate risk and responses in the process of dealing with our business. And I think in the process, changes the culture, promotes the right ethics in the department in dealing with our business. As I say, in the main components of this is prevention, detection, investigation, and resolution of matters. That means resolution is action that relates to what has been found, including criminal, disciplinary, as well as corrective measures in terms of the processes and internal control improvements. I think I have, these are the elements of the prevention. I'm not going to deal with them in detail unless members are interested. Under detection, these are the issues that we're dealing with. Under investigation, these are the things we're dealing with. And then resolution, look at controls, discipline, and all the related activities. I think the AG always raised the issue under key drivers of improvements. In all of the reports, you'll see that there's a section that deals with those. Leadership is key. Ownership of these processes in the department, I confirm, are at the highest level within the department. Executive authority, minister and deputy minister, my office, and the executive team. Through the campaigns, the awareness campaigns, we're now spreading it through the staff so that they also see what direction is being given with regard to the matter. Whistleblower environment, which is part of the fraud prevention strategy. They may be employees, they may be members of the public, and service providers are encouraged to follow the procedures prescribed in the Protective Disclosure Act. As part of our internal communication, where external communication will be packaging a continuous message that ensures that there is participation and there is also comfort given to anyone who has to act on these matters appropriately, that we will do something about it and will also comply with the requirements of the Act and protect them to the extent possible in dealing with matters which they raise about corruption. So they say no person shall suffer any penalty or retribution for acting in good faith, reporting on any suspected or actual incidents of fraud and corruption that occurs. And that is with that it must be seen within the framework of the law. Chair, we have about since 2009, and I think I must give the context to this. The unit started to get statistics, manage the investigation in a structured way around 2009-10. We don't have statistics that go beyond 2009-10. To date, there are 225 cases on our register, and these are not in the FIU, as I have already indicated, they are in the internal register. 79 have been completed. Are at various stages of investigation, whether in the final stages of execution or at the reporting stages in order to take the next steps of deciding what needs to be done going forward. And then both were referred to the SIU and therefore I'll have to be dealt with under the SIU. Three were that have been referred to start. And they relate to cases, one case in 2009-10, 11-12, and their conclusion is dependent on the search processes. Then 20 have been referred to the business unit where it is okay for either action or conclusion of what is required in terms of the recommendations made in each of the cases. And then some of the cases that we picked up relate to and we had to be referred to provincial departments because they don't necessarily affect the national department. There are about 33 that have not yet been started. Of the 79, cases that go back there, 79 that are completed what's issued to management. 50 have been, declarations have been recommended. 36 have been finalized and others are pending in terms of the disciplinary process. Eleven are going through criminal cases, 5 civil, and 3 relate to cases where we've had to blacklist people through the National Treasury process. Of the summary of the disciplinary, of the 16 cases that have been recommended for disciplinary cases, 36 have been finalized as reported. There's 1 dismissal, 7 written warnings, final written warnings, 10 written warnings, 8 suspensions without pay, 9 were found as guilty, 5 were not pursued for various reasons, that where the evidence was, after assessment, not sufficient for the matters to be dealt with and concluded through that process. Investigations that have been completed, report not yet submitted, management, 65 cases. 37 have, after assessment, deemed to be cases where disciplinary action is finally recommended so that they are pursued to their conclusion. Number of possible criminal cases to be reported to SAPS in those 65 are 6, and possible action to be instituted 1. Number of possible blacklisting to National Treasury 3. Allegations of unfounded cases after further investigation are 32. Summary of allegations referred to various stakeholders and law enforcement for further reporting. Referrals to SAPS, referrals to internal business units, and referrals to provinces. Then we can, on the awareness campaign, four awareness workshops are rolled out across the entire department. That is to the throughout the 11 regions plus the head office. There were presentations that have already been made during the EPW programs and during engagement with the contractors on aspects that are related to them and our approach to dealing with matters of fraud. We have, in liaison with HR, began to infuse in the induction program for new employees, a section that deals with matters, the department stands on anti-fraud. Anti-fraud and corruption posters have been developed, which we will put to the fraud department. Also, we'll put articles on the works news, the internal publication, on key aspects of the our anti-fraud stance. As has been indicated, proposed fraud awareness workshops that are, one has been undertaken already. The plans, I think about 11 that will be undertaken throughout the department. At head office, there was one on the 16th of May. There was one in already in July in Tata, which was done with the contractors, not with officials. And then in Mabato, I think we're also indicating where we're targeting officials. It was 74 officials plus one contractor. And then in Mabato, I don't know why it was only one. Oh, sorry, one with contractors. In Mabato, on the 7th of August, 2 that were undertaken. In Pulupane, it's scheduled for 28 to 29, and I can indicate with regard to the rest of the program. We are targeting to deal with 2,357 employees within the department. And the reason, I think the prioritization of this are the people who are acting in areas where there is the high susceptibility to fraud and corruption, like SCM, payment, in the construction, construction environment, etc. This is the current priority and the mapping out of this going forward to the end of the year, under the run by the chief audit executive for the anti-fraud strategy implementation. The activities are instituted and finalized investigations reported in the current year. As you will see, there are quite a number of outstanding cases we need to clean up on. We want to initiate and finalize the 11 investigations reported during the 2012-13 financial year, during the current year, and make sure that they reach their final, their logical conclusion, and are now reported as concluded. Then between January and March, we will deal with the 4 investigations that were reported for the year 2013-14 that remain unresolved. And then during that period also, as we pick up from the cases and the discussion and awareness campaign, we will finalize the review of the strategy so that even next year we continue to have an improved environment under this project. We will continue to do these fraud awareness campaigns as have been indicated, targeting the 2,327 officials and contractors towards the regions. By conducting 15 awareness workshops at the regional offices and head office that have been indicated. Currently, we are dealing with the issue of capacitating our fraud awareness and investigation unit. Start to develop implementation plans for each of the projects and implement them. Depending on the strategy that we have developed for each of the processes. We will then we'll report also regularly, but we will have a summarized and concluded report for the performance of the year by the end of the year in order for us to incorporate in the annual report for 2013-14. Successes, as you will have seen, Chair, the cases that have been dealt with, despite the speed and that are being handled by the SIU, have yielded results that at least begin to send the message that there shall be action against these cases. I think the internal investigation, despite the capacity that we have alluded to, have managed to deal with quite a sizable number of these cases. I think the important thing is going forward to make sure that all of the cases are concluded and action is taken. I think you will have seen that there are officials that are under suspension, which have been implicated, and we are able to put them on suspension as a first step of indicating that we will act against people as we discover them. We also have instituted disciplinary processes, criminal proceedings, that detected are then pursued. I think one of the other cases is we are beginning to put people on a permanent basis. Certainly at the executive level, we have now more stabilized the department. And in particular, I think we will then be attending to the issue of the inadequate capacity within this. As I say, the challenge is the capacity which we are addressing. I think generally, as a matter of what influence, to change the culture, there is a culture of non-compliance that has been there in the department. It's a major concern. I think it's been reported. The minister has made several references to that. going forward through these initiatives, we want to begin to change that culture to one of compliance without removing the ability for people to be to deal with matters innovatively. I think this slave affair arrangement of non-compliance is just not going to be continuing. It will take action against people who lose things. There has been generally a poor internal control environment, which we are now addressing. Going forward, I think we will be able to address this. It is part of the activities that we are undertaking here. When we bring the turnaround strategy project progress, you will see the other areas that are not necessarily in this value chain that we are also improving internal controls on, with the aim of ensuring that as we stabilize the department, we stabilize it with proper internal controls and proper customer arrangements. The other challenge is, I think you will see that just by a sheer number of cases and investigations that this department has had, a high level of fraud and corruption. And I think because of the nature of the business itself, it's always going to be targeted for this. With internal controls, the problem becomes embedded. And I think as we strengthen them, we'll seek to resolve those issues. Solutions, turnaround innovation initiatives, I think the solutions have been determined and put as part of the turnaround strategy. Ours is to then continue to implement them and improve on some of the areas as we go along. We have identified that we need a very strong governance, risk, compliance branch, and a dedicated SCM branch that deals with our main business. We do a lot of supply chain management for government to a tune of 2.3 billion of the budget, capital budget in the various departments. They are controlled by us, but we have a very small unit that is structured on the old basis of provisioning with many officials who are very junior provisioning officials who are not trained in the modern supply chain management principles and implementation. We want to change that if we are to change the extent to which we have irregular expenditure. And I think, Chair, when we come with the final report, annual report, you will see how much we've done to reconstruct the financials to reflect on things that may not have been covered, which were part of the disclaimers that the AG had raised before, and to just indicate the extent of non-compliance which we need to deal with, most of which is in the supply chain management environment. We also begin to fill the vacancies and also simultaneously identifying the external assistance and capacity, particularly with skills that are not there and therefore which are the results of where we are. The establishment of the standalone anti-corruption unit within the department to deal with the issue of addressing fraud and corruption issues as and when it is discovered in a much more severe manner. Promote ethics within the organization. We identified the rollout of the fraud awareness campaign. We want to align the fight against corruption with the departmental operational effectiveness. And that is beginning to be reflected as we finish the service delivery improvement plan of the department. Thank you.
Thanks for the presentation by the DG.
Can you move next to where I am?
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. Thanks to the DG for the presentation as well as the Minister and Deputy Minister. It shows that what the Minister promised us, that he will keep on updating us on the issue of fraud and corruption. He continues to really update us and get an understanding. I think it empowers us as members of the committee to work with the Minister that always works with us very closely. We really appreciate it. But I want to check, Honorable Chair, how many leases are part of the project where detection and interventions are planned to take place? How many are those particular leases that are they going to focus at around the issue of intervention? Also, I want to check there was a report that were given when the Minister was hearing a process, listening to the people when he took over the department. When he came back, he raises so many challenges that we're facing department, issue of capacity, and also on HR, he indicated that he also indicated that the HR
time frame, so that when we do our oversight, we make a follow-up,
We know exactly that we were told that by that time it will be submitted to the executive to deal with it. The other issue, Honorable Chair, on the issue of the registration of the criminal cases, also we request that we have the time frame. We are told that time we have filed a criminal, we have registered a criminal case, so that we can see how long does it take after they have registered the case, so that maybe as parliamentarians we can recommend to the parliament if it means to say that those institutions are delayed because of the piling of the cases, maybe to have a special unit that will deal with the issue of the fraud and corruption. It will assist us if you tell us that we filed this criminal case by that time, so that if we see that it's a system that is a problem, and then we have suggestions on the system how to deal with those particular matters. Also around the issue of conflict of interest, it's a concern, Honorable Chair. That person on page 10, conflict of interest, I heard the DG, I was listening carefully, indicating that further details may fall around those particular matters. But I'm not sure how many times must a person continue with conflict of interest before it's being fired. Said four times now. It's giving written warning on the same matter. Really, I think we are having a concern around that matter. If they can unpack and explain to us why the very same matter of this very same thing that that person is doing can be tolerated four times, and where is that person by that time? And on the issue of Umtata, Honorable Chair, there is an indication that there is eight times criminal cases registered against service providers and one official. One would like to know where is that official? Where is the official now? Is she still in the region, or where is he now? And last, Chairperson, also can this issue of the panel unpack how many service providers would be appointed and by when? Those panel of service providers that will deal with the issue of investigation that is in the report here. And what will be the powers of the panel service providers after the findings? Or what will be just their powers? Vis-a-vis on page 13, the Fraud Awareness and Investigation Directorate, that is also dealing with internal audit and investigation of services. What will be the difference between the two if that one is being appointed, Honorable Chair? But because, Honorable Chair, you keep on looking at me, I will pause here.
I'll give you a second bite. Thank you very much. Honorable Dreyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'll follow on what my colleague has said. I have had similar concerns, and maybe I will elaborate a little further. My general impression is first that there's a lot of emphasis on processes, awareness campaigns, policies, units to be established or have been established to combat fraud. Now, that's all very well and good. They need to be there. But that's the foundation blocks. We now need to go much further, and we need more action, and we need consequences, and we need to have many more specifics in place. So what my colleague has said there. Now let me go to specifics. I want to know, have all senior managers declared their financial interest as required by the Public Service Commission by the due date? And if not, what has happened to those who have not declared? But because there must be consequences, there must be actions that have been declared, and those who haven't, what happened to them? Then the SIU Special Investigative Unit into the Nkandla story. And I'm sorry about my one colleague here who says I keep on harping on the same thing. It's my song. Yes, it's my song, and I'm going to keep on until we've got the full story. There was an uncertainty whether the President has actually signed the proclamation for the SIU to continue with the investigation. I want to know whether the Minister confirms to us that this proclamation has indeed been signed, and if so, when. Then, still on Kantla, the internal report on Kandla. The ministers made it available to Parliament on condition that it's referred to a committee that will sit in private or will sit on secrecy. I want to know whether the minister would consider that, reconsider that step and actually make it available to this portfolio committee that deals directly with public works and including the prestige project, including the Kandla, this particular case. We all know that there are matters relating to security. We accept that. But we can easily exclude, expunge those part of the report that specifically deal with security and make the rest of the report available. So I want to know whether the minister would do that. Then on the coming to all the slides with details, nature of dispute, progress and so on, following on what my colleague Matlopa said, we see, for example, details, suspension of former Director General, that's on page 8. I see the Deputy Minister is looking. Okay, there's been a number of former deputies or former directors general because there have been so many over the years. We need to know which one. We need names. Which one are you referring to? Last year, the last year, before last year, or when? Former acting DG, same story. Senior official, Pretoria Regional Office. Which ones? We need names. These people must be named as shame. We want to know that official has been investigated for this particular act. Also then, you know, still on the details that we need, the settlement is reached on that same page. At what was the settlement? Was he paid an amount? If so, how many millions? Disciplinary hearing concluded on that same page. Outcome awaited. When was this disciplinary hearing concluded? Because we can't wait forever. Okay, so I won't go through everyone. You get my drift. But it's a pattern right through all those tables with the columns when we hear DPW official, you know, irregular point of contractors. Which contractor, which officials are involved in? Conflict of interest. Four times written warning pending. We want to know why a fourth, I thought three times written warning and thereafter there's usually action. Now there's a fourth written warning. Why this? Madam Chair, then, yes, I've asked about the declaration of financial interests. If you just bear with me, I'll just get to the other. Oh, yes. On the internal investigations, page 24, to be fair, I've looked at 2011-2012 and the following year, financial year, 2012-2013, because the current year is still ongoing and that's still ongoing. But if you look at those 2 years that are behind us, the progress has been exceptionally slow. For example, 2011-2012, the number of cases reported, 79, that's on page 24. Completed reports issued to management, it's 31. That's less than half. That's 2 years ago. What happened to the others? Are they still pending? And so, or what's happening? The same in the following year, 2012-2013. Number of cases reported, 58. Number completed reports issued to management, 21. That's also a financial year that's well behind us now. What happened to the others and why is the progress so slow?
Andre, can I check if they are following you because you are too fast?
No,
whether they are capturing everything.
Okay.
DG, are you okay? Are you able to catch everything? Okay, continue.
Page 26, misconduct, summary of disciplinary cases. It's the same story, 2011-2012, 35, number of recommended disciplinary actions. Number finalized, only 24. Now, that's already 2 years ago, two financial years ago. Why have they not been complete 2 years ago? Last year, 12, number of recommended disciplinary actions, number finalized, only one. What happened to all the others? I won't go through all of them. There are lots of details, but you get my drift. I'm very concerned about the slow progress, and then that means that people actually get away, and there are not sufficient consequences, and it's time for consequences. They must be, justice must be seen to be done. So is there any way that you can speed up the progress? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Collins.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I must congratulate and appreciate the presentations. And we must thank the Deputy Minister for their commitment and their loyalty towards what the department needs to be doing and if they are not being recalled because it's a redeployment in the past. Chairperson, my concern, Chairperson, is that one of my concern, Chairperson, is the recovery strategy, because if you can check this report, there is no report about how much has been recovered from these officials and contractors that have been corrupted in the department. There is nothing that they're saying that. And the other one, Chairperson, is this one on page 9, Chairperson. On page 9, on the CFO, former CFO, negotiation resignation. If there was that negotiation, how much was paid to that CFO, and if it was any budget on that negotiations. And the other one, Chairperson, on page 24. On the future, I think Honorable Dreyer has been contested what I want to say, because the slow pace of this investigation is shocking, actually, because if you can take that one, total is 225, but if you can see the internal reporting page 65 and executing is only 9, and completed the report issued, it's 779 out of 225. There's something wrong that needs. There's something that needs to be done. There. And on page 26, Chairperson, is that one of recommendation, and of disciplinary actions, which shows the total is 60. The total 2012-2013. This will check the finalization. It's only one dismissal, nothing. They can final written warnings, nothing. It's only one, the written warning, nothing, suspension, nothing, not guilty. That's why I don't know what's happened, because it shows that the report are trying. If you can give actually and the understanding of what actually happened. And the last one, Chairperson, is that one on page 32. On page 32, Chairperson, is that vacant post. When on page 32. When is the department going to fill this vacancy? Because it is a song. If you remember the president last year, he talked about the vacancy, the filling up of vacancy. Even in 2009, until today, what is the department doing? Because we have to do something about this. Because actually, it can pull the department. And the last one, Chairperson, is the one on page 34. Internal capacity. If you can give us the time frame, when are we going to fill up this? When are we going to do the skill development and actually the transformation in the department for transferring of skills? And thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Mwanga Mabila.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by appreciating the presentation. And also appreciate the progress. While I agree with my colleagues that the pace is very slow, I think the department is taking long to finalize some of the cases. Chair, when looking at the records, you know, the missing of dates, it makes it difficult for us to track where there are delays. But we're looking at the statistics, we can just see. But the missing of dates, I think, it did empower us to check whether there are delays or the department is fast-tracking other cases. I think my colleague has mentioned the issue of the acting DGs, because if you're saying the former acting DG, then you become confused. I think that's what will be clarified. You have said that you are going to fill some vacant position, but there's no indication how many are you going to fill, and also the amount that will be required. Do you have the financial capacity to fill those vacancies? The other one, Chair, in picture, page 27, the number of possible cases to be reported to police. There are cases 5 cases of 2009-10. There are also, there's one case of 2011-12. Then you just ask yourself, why is it taking long for those 6 cases to be reported to police from 2009-10-11-12? You know, those cases can't be reported, because if you're saying to be, it means that something that is to be done. So I don't know, why is it taking long? Then page 27, the number of possible disciplinary actions to be taken. When looking at the financial year 9, 10, 3, 10, 11, they are 7. But up to date, those cases have not yet, those disciplinary actions have not yet been taken. 28, you talk of the referrals of some cases to SAPS. In 2009-10, there was one. In 2011-12, two. Is there any progress? Do you monitor whether SAPS is acting on the cases that are being reported to it? Where is the PSC involved in this whole? Because they're talking that you're working with the Auditor General, I think, fine, with National Treasury, but I think the Public Service Commission also is supposed to be part of this process, because they're dealing with the public service. So the PSC has got a role to play. There was a question, especially on the disclosure by directors, senior managers. I think also they have to be part of this process. And on page 24, we have indicated the 33 cases that have not started to, let me check, page 24. The 33 cases that you have not started whether to investigate or what. And when looking at 2012-2013, there were 12 cases, 13-14, 21. Chair, while we appreciate the progress, I think there's a need for the department to fast track some of these cases so that we finalize them on time. They must not remain in our hooks, you know, counting from 2009 cases up to date. They have not yet reached any finality stage. I think that is the concern that I'm having, but we appreciate the progress so far. At least there's something that has been done. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable November.
I've just one concern, because my colleagues have said it all. It's just that the people that are being suspended or cases are still investigated. What is being done? Are they still getting their salaries? Or what is happening to them? Are some of them at home just doing nothing? What is happening? That's the only explanation, because most of the things are said, if I can repeat them now, now it will take us a long time. But in the bulela kakhulu yabonakala ngoba ikhona into eyenzekayo. Enkosi, masiqhubeleni ngaphambili ngomsebenzi.
Thank you, Honorable November. I think the next is me. Thanks, Honorable Madlala.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me join my colleagues by thanking the report. I think there's a progress made. But I'm having a concern here, especially on page 26, where you are saying that there are suspensions without pay. In total, there are 8. How long are they going to be? How long were they suspended? And were they refunded their money? Also, those who are found guilty, they are 9. What happened to them? Were they taken back to their original work, or what happened to them? If I may be clarified on that point. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Madlala. I think now it's me. Okay. On page 7, the second bullet point, the turnaround study provided funding to allow SIU to continue their mandate. I think funding against how far are you now with the expenditure? Because we're all complaining about the slow pace of, we really appreciate what is being done. strict action is being taken against the people who want to defraud the government. How much, roughly percentage, how much have you spent on the case? That will tell you that the pace, that will give you the rough idea of the pace. And really the fact that we don't have the dates, we do have the dates when the cases were lodged, but we don't have the dates as to, I know it's not upon you, but the people who are being paid, they need to give us the value for money. Secondly, it's on page 9. Maybe if you can explain, or also it's about the lease agreements in Joburg in the region. Non-occupation and the sounds against landlord to recover 28 million. The question is, are these officials still employed? How are you going to recover this 28 million? Where are these officials? On page 10, on the destruction of the documents, seeking to conceal evidence. My question is, actually it's a suggestion that we once gave to the regional officers as to what really needs to happen. I don't know if it's possible, but it is possible with other departments, that whatever happens in the regional office, it reflects in the office of the DG, so that you don't rely entirely on the reports of those officials in the regional offices. You know, even if somebody punches the computer at regional, whatever regional office, it reflects in your office, and then you will know what is happening in other offices instead of depending entirely on the reports. On page. Okay, maybe on page 12, also you have been assisted by the Auditor General, the Public Protector. Maybe if you could give us the fee as to how page 12 within Public Protector. And on page 14, the reference cases to other law enforcement agencies like SIU, SAS, and NIR. When were these cases referred, and what is the latest information? So some of the questions have been asked by my colleagues. Okay, just a few. On page 20, under challenges, the challenge of high turnover and process of filling the posts is very lengthy. Can something be done to shorten those? Why, if Paul Kruger used to use this system, where you still have to use it as this department? I mean, can't something be done to shorten we're going to have a crisis, so we can't be using, we need to have 6 months for advertisements and all that and all that. Just lastly, Chair, on the it's also a concern. Out of 60 cases, there's only one dismissal, and everybody has touched on that. And on the issue of successes, okay, it's bullet number 2, suspension of officials implicated. Are they being paid? Are they suspended without pay or with pay? And is that not a loss to the department? Criminal proceedings taking place. Okay, slow pace of investigation. And then the permanent appointments made in executive positions. I remember the minister once complained about the low level of some of the officials that are in the department. Has that been corrected as to, for instance, if there is if you've got quantity surveyors available in the department, nobody will tell you that you need to use 30 bags of cement instead of 10. Engineers and accountants, do you have those professional executive positions filled? And thanks, Chairperson, I was covered by other colleagues.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Can I allow my dropper to finish your question so that we have 5 minutes break after that for the department to prepare themselves in answering, responding to questions? 5 minutes break after Madhava. Madhava, over to you.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, Minister once said to our meeting, I like your honesty, Honourable Minister. You once indicated to us that some of the figures does not correspond when the reporting is being done. But I think now, because we are starting from scratch, I think the issue of consistency around the issue of figures, it must be taken care of. Like in 2011, there was an indication that the cases that has been finalized is 98. But when you look at the presentation, it doesn't talk to that. It's different. But what is important is that you indicated to us say that you want to collect, and the issue of Honorable Mwengwane indicating that, you know, linking the system will assist, because some of the figures are coming from the regions, they are being sent to the headquarters, and then next time they give you different figures. Because when you look at this one, it doesn't talk to the report that we got for 2011-2012, that there were 98 cases of misconduct that were finalized, and today is like 36. So these figures must be really looked at so that there is a consistency in the report.
Thank you very much, Honourable Madam. Can we take 5 minutes break, stretch our legs while the department is getting ready to respond? I don't know. Will, is the tea outside? Huh? Okay, 5 minutes break. Talk to the DG. Mama? Thank you.
with
Thank you.
One minute, can we? Can we get settled? Welcome to the meeting. Thank you, Minister. Let's go back to the meeting and allow the department to respond. Minister, will you be first? And also to welcome Umjabi. Welcome. Thank you very much. Honorable Minister, over to you.
Premier, best thanks, Chairperson, and honorable members and comrades. Something is missing. Something is missing.
I think, Minister, the presentation that is requested by media, I just want to get them settled. I think the Deputy Minister attended to it to say, let's get settled. I gave you my copy, but you will get other copies. They are still photocopying copies, so you will get it before leaving. Yes, I think there's nothing to hide. You will get the copies.
Why are they ready for this one? Is it a juicy story? No. I thought Chairperson and the honourable members, something is missing. I was told commended us and other people, and the honourable trainer didn't say she notices progress, although it's very slow. Let me start here and say we did indicate to But in terms of our turnaround, we're talking about three phases. We said the first phase, we're talking stabilization. And the second phase, which we said, it's going to take us 3 years. We were talking about improving the business of the department. But the last phase, which we said is the fundamental reconstructing of that department, might take 7 years. Because we had identified what we had called very deep problems, deep structural problems, skills problems, systems issues. That was not going to take us overnight. Let me make an example. If a wrong person has been employed to be a chief director for a particular unit, let's say through nepotism or whatever, you're not just going to go in and simply remove that person. There are legal processes, there's labor relations. That person is already permanent in this system. And you can't simply appoint somebody else because you'll sit with the double parking. That's the reality. So you'll have to go through your whole structure of the department, skills audit of the department, and start matching the people. And indeed, some people might even be redundant because they were appointed at the wrong level, and those people, you have to transfer them somewhere. And you must not think that there's an area which is ready for the people who are not qualified in other areas. So that one is always going to be a process. So that is my understanding of the TPW. But I think honorable members are right to say on some of the things, we must talk about targets, deadlines, and deliverables. It can't just be an open-ended process. But I thought that I must prefix it by saying that. Take, for instance, HR, which is so central. All along, we've been concentrating on audit, property issues, and so on. Very late, we realized that there's a red one, which is the whole HR. And to the extent that what we've done with HR, in response to the question which you're asking, Comrade Mashab, we had to go to other departments, request senior people who are operating at HR level to be seconded into our departments so that they can come and help us. And those people are already there. They are helping us from the other departments. Sometimes it's not a full secondment, it's a part-time secondment, because they must spend half this side and spend some of the days on the other side. But I think those people have been very, very helpful. That is why we have been able to move some of the things. Some of the appointments, we should have made them long ago. We couldn't until we had those people. Because the culture of resistance from within, you see, when you're bringing in new people from outside, was also a problem. In fact, HR is responsible for disciplinary hearings. Because the labor relations unit is there. What I can say in relation to that, the high profile cases which were linked to the very people whom you expect that they are going to help you to deal with corruption, we had to outsource them. We had to bring in top people from outside legally to share those processes. Because if you had taken it in internally, you would not be able to move. You would come with the very same recommendations, written warning, and so on. So on those cases, we had to put our foot down because we had to make an example. Take up those high-profile cases, whom you know that it's for very strategic people. And we had to do that. Fortunately, on those cases, the evidence was already collected by the FIU. Hence it was easy to deal with those cases. And some of these dismissals which we are talking about. And for that matter, I can tell you the reason why he is seated next to the DG had to be driven from my office. But with the other people helping at the departmental level. And some people can make an issue out of that. But if you had left them to the department
the type of the department which you had, you're not going to be able to move on those cases because they must give evidence, they must do everything and so on. And then the presiding officer will only decide on the basis of the facts which have been presented. On some of them, the reason why the presiding officers would come with what we perceive as light sentences, it depends on the information which we're giving. And to give that information, we rely on the same officials. And most of those cases are the cases which were processed even before the DG came in. But I can say, I can currently be honest to this committee and say, labor relations is really challenging because of the capacity. Hence now, we're pulling in the people from the other departments to come and help us. We are reconstructing that unit on its own. But one of the things we must accept, Chairperson, is our labor relations. The labor relations regime in the country, it provides for substantive fairness. And you miss a step there, you finished. You can deal with an employee, you even come up with a hard sanction or even expulsion. You go to a higher level, they challenge you, it's reversed because you have missed a step. We must not accept that our labor relations want you to be meticulous in following all the necessary steps. For instance, if the employer requests for a postponement of the case, they can be able to do that. Sometimes you can see that it's a deliberate delay of that particular case. You are obliged by the very same law to give them the opportunity to prepare and defend. And in these cases, when people know that they are going to be expelled, they employ expensive lawyers, senior counsel in some instances. And if they present a compelling case, why it has to be postponed. So you must thus accept that the legal process is tedious. And on the other hand, those people are getting paid. There must be a reason that you can say they must not be paid. They are getting paid on the other hand. And this thing is moving at its own pace. You might want to fast track it, but it's moving at its own pace. So I think there must be that particular understanding. Whilst there's a quest to fast track them, but you have to respect all the processes of the law, of our labor relations, so that everybody is satisfied. The registration of the criminal cases. After registering that case, unfortunately, it's out of our hands. It belongs to the other departments. All we can do is to inquire, how far is this case? So it becomes sometimes a matter of stops, and then it becomes a matter of the Justice Department. And you know, it's common knowledge, that a number of cases, which are not even related to this, there has been a lot of backlogs. It's common knowledge in our justice system. Maybe the recommendation, the politicians can take it up, as they interact with the other processes to say, maybe you might need to have special courts which are dealing with these cases. But it's up to, like one was recommended, but it's up to the politicians to take that matter. It's within your own right, as maybe to send a clear message that we fast track those cases, we have special courts dealing with them and so on. But now I would leave that to my own recommendations. So once we have reported that case, it goes into either SAPS or into the NPA, the whole justice system. I know, for instance, I've had meetings with the ministers raising the very same concern. I know that this DG also has met his counterparts, including my acting DG, about these particular cases. But, of course, they are dealing with those backlogs, so they will be coming. But also, even the very, you see, the arm of the law is very long. It takes its own time. And the wheel of justice can be very slow. And you must just respect that. It's not at the pace at which you want. I think I thought that I must be able to raise that. In terms of the declaration, maybe the DG will say something. Indeed, people have not declared previously. But in terms of the current financial years, because we started on a new slate now, people did declare. There might be one or two who might not have declared, whom the BSC has been able to say, hey, wake up about this person and so on. We're dealing with that. But we can't disclose the name. Let the sleeping dogs, unless we wake them up, because we have to deal with those particular issues. But in terms of now, they are starting to declare, but there are previous, what you call, periods where they have not declared, and it was the PSC which was able to say to us, hey, deal with these matters, because these people had not declared. The CFO, you see, somebody can argue and say procedure was not followed. Looking at the SIU reports, which were coming to us, which were not directly implicating the CFO on corruption, but on issues of mismanagement, I had a choice. Remember, I didn't have a DG. I had acting people, acting all over. I had to bite the bullet. I was forced maybe to say, I must charge, allow all those processes which could even take more than a year. On the other hand, I don't have a person who's permanent there. And the amount that was going to be spent, having lawyers and all those things, all I did was to say, given what is with me, I can charge you with 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Because you're not delivering. And by the way, even the very same labor relations, the question which you ask when you fire somebody for not delivering, what have you done to train that person? Shocking. Even at the senior level, you ask those questions, what have you done to do the corrective measures? It becomes a very complex matter. Now, if I followed that route, I can guess I could have spent more than, or close to a million, or even more than a million rand. But I decided to say, I am giving you so much, 3 months, or 4 months, to put a resignation, you go. So that I employ the competent people, and I can tell you, it delivered, because it still has to be seen. You will judge for yourselves in terms of the new audit which is going to come. It might not be what we want, but I think there is a significant improvement. And I can tell you, within a year or two, we will be where we're supposed to be. Because we had to change the team. I don't know what are the results, but when I'm interacting with that particular team, which I had to put in place, and the new CFO, things started moving. But if I had followed that process, even now, I would not have been able to appoint a new CFO. Because you have to wait, control everything before you can appoint the new CFO. But because I could see that on the actual issue of corruption, there were no implications on the president. It was issues of mismanagement and not managing that particular unit. And I said, now it's a choice between 150,000, which is 3 months' salary, and the many millions we would spend pursuing this particular matter, which is not linked to corruption but mismanagement, or just releasing the person. So there was a choice. I had to bite the bullet so that I can improve the department. Let me come to the last one, and then the DG will go into all the other specifics. Honorable, you want to hear about Makandla? As we all know, colleagues, the investigation deals with the sensitive security matters relating to the head of state. And I want to restate that. As DPW, it's common knowledge, we investigated the matter and released the outcome of our report. We released the outcome of our report. Because precisely they were sensitive matters, which we could not take them to the public, because they were coming from the security security, what you call units. But also it's common knowledge that the public protector is dealing with the matter. And we have cooperated fully with all her requests for the information. Even now we are cooperating. And it's also common knowledge that the report has been handed to the speaker. And the parliamentary process will unfold. That report has been handed to the speaker. Contrary to some reports that we're not handing the report. For us, while there are those processes, a parliamentary process which is dealing with that report. And by the way, let me remind some of the colleagues. In the debate, when the president was answering questions, some of the suggestions came from the member of parliament themselves, that dealing with such information cannot just be dealt with by any public committee. It has to be processed through some committee of the vetted people or an intelligence committee. And I can quote, it was Honorable Olomisa who said that. And in our interactions with the parliament, we took that particular route. We said that report will submit it to the speaker so that it's discussed in that committee, which is the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, which has representatives of all political parties. Now, how do you give the information now on the same report this side whilst there's another process on the other side? That is my problem in relation to that. And it is my view that it's premature even to talk about this matter when there is a process in the same parliament which is dealing with that particular matter, unless it's a political game. Because it's also the issue to us, not that we didn't want to give the information, that's why we've given the reports to Parliament. It's insensitive to request the document which deals with the security of the heads of state. It's as simple as that. I do not have. So my argument is that let's wait for the public protector and the parliamentary processes to take their own course. It's a public thing. It's the DA which has requested the public protector also to deal with this particular. Let's wait for those reports. And then once they come, let's deal with those issues. And once those processes are done, the report is going to be made available. All of us are going to have access to that report. That committee of the intelligence in Parliament is a committee of this Parliament, which reports to this Parliament. It's not some committee somewhere. The issue of the proclamation, whether it's signed or not signed, but that question as to when cannot be asked to this one, because it's not us who are signing that. Proclamations are dealt with at another level. The question can be asked at that level, not from us. So that's how I respond generally to these issues. That is our view. But on this particular matter, even the public protector has been able to say these departments have been cooperating in terms of this information. When it was even announced that they had to do an inspection in loco last week. And she said, I am 90-whatever% in releasing the report. So there's nothing which we are, but what we cannot do is to confuse ourselves and deal with all these processes. The report then, I want to emphasize, was submitted to the speaker, including our letter which was leaked into the media, by the way. We don't know who leaked it. We're still going to deal with those issues, but it was leaked to the media. And even were misrepresented by those who leaked that letter into the media in terms of their reference to say, we have said Minister Gwele has classified the report. We would still want to know in all our submissions and even our correspondence where we have said Mr. Gwele has done that. We'll still ask that particular question. So what I'm saying is, there is a process to deal with a particular report. And generally speaking, on all the issues which you are dealing with, I mean, we are dealing with fraud and corruption. Until a total overhaul of that department, we will not be able to correct everything, but we will have to do it in small chunks, bit by bit, because it was deeply rooted in the system. Hence, first that we have a DG who's very financial wise. Thanks that we have such a DG with an understanding of the compliance issues. And some issues are starting to come up now. But remember, in some areas we still have acting people. We're dealing with all those issues, but step by step. And you know, in government, just an advert of a position it has to take, and you have to follow certain steps. You miss one step, somebody's going to challenge you. We need to make sure that all those things, you are meticulous on how you deal with them. But I'll leave the DG to deal with the specifics which have been. I thought that I needed to give that background and answer this big one, which always come in, even if it's not supposed to come in. We're dealing with another fraud, but it's just been thrown there. We've not even determined whether it's fraud and corruption, because those coming reports are still going to determine. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. DG, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. The minister has covered some of the questions that were asked. We will deal with some of the specific issues. Perhaps before I start with dealing with those, with regard to the investigation unit in the department, I think we have acknowledged, Chair, that it is also one of the areas that needs to be ramped up. The two areas, we need to deal with this, recognizing that with the IR department in motion, we have to continue to deal with the day-to-day issues and also look at the longer-term strategy. Currently, I have approved the appointment of the critical post in that area in its current form. As I indicated, now overhauling it in order to ensure that it is properly structured, capacitated, and capable of dealing with the issues. So there are two questions that relate that are relevant in this regard. One deals with the issue of the panel, just for me to provide an indication of what we met with the panel of service providers. At the moment, we have a structure that is complete in the investigation unit, which I think they are both are in the process of recruited and filled, as we speak, already approved. But in order to do the work of the investigations that need to be attended to, we had to have a panel of service providers. We procured them to an open process, identify their areas of the expertise and list, and that included the firms that we know, the external firms like Deloitte and Bush, and all of those that deal with forensic investigations and all related investigations. That panel is then checked. We check them on the basis of their capabilities and all the requirements for procurement and put them on our database. When we have an investigation, we don't need to then go back and use another 3 months of advertising the tender. We develop the terms of reference we give to any number of them, 3, sometimes 5, and ask them to give us a quotation that's appropriate for that in a very short period of time. It's like dealing with the opportunity in a manner that ensures that we're able to respond quickly. That's the intervention we're looking. So that panel is of those kinds of caliber of people. So then they give us reports that are useful for finalizing the cases that we're dealing with. I think on the use of the listeners, just to give an example, of the work. I think last week I did make mention to some of the issues around that. We have, firstly, listings of properties owned by government do not have a risk of fraud that relates to the type of findings, the fact of collusion, etc. They may have a risk of fraud where people may want to steal money, but that risk is very low. Leases relate to the leases that we enter into with the private sector. Landlords, we sign as leases, Most of those cases where you have those leases where there was collusion and et cetera, and all of those things where they paid, it's in those cases. In our portfolio, we have 2,778 of those leases. 2,778, at least at the time when we started. But that number can change from time to time, depending on whether departments demand to require additional leases. But the current portfolio we're reviewing as of April, 2,708 leases. An analysis of all these leases revealed that 1,316 are certainly problematic leases, in that they most of them are expired, or they discover that they are problematic with regard to documentation, process, etc. And these are the ones that we now would then target to ensure that they either are rectified, investigated, determined whether they are criminality or offenses that relate to them, quite a number. The reports of the outcomes of the disciplinary cases, criminal cases that we have already given in terms of the report we've given, are part of the 1,216 leases. Quite a daunting task. I think minutes of data relate to the issue of the labor relations issues which we're dealing with. The questions that relate to Honorable Dreyer, I think the emphasis on processes, I think it's critical in that we need to give you a sense of the what is taking place. I must say, we are reporting on the statistics per the register that we have, that we are now managing. We acknowledge that there's been this the weakness of capacity in dealing with speeding up some of these investigations. We've taken a new route to actually look at the old cases, because I think the new team that is dealing with this investigation has struggled to get sufficient documentation that relates to most of the early cases. I think we wouldn't want to have a case for 2009-10 still in process, but the extent of the quality of the information, the availability of that, and is just so bad that sometimes I want to take an executive decision at some point to do a proper analysis of which cases are valuable to pursue and which cases, and the criteria must be about not encouraging further deterioration of the situation. If it's senior people who are involved, then you go deeper in forensics and spend a lot of money so that you make the case. But if you see that it's just it's a case that you may not be, in terms of materiality and number of factors I will consider in dealing that, we'll then have to deal with those cases so that we use our resources to deal with things that are happening now that have not prescribed. Because to pursue something that is prescribed that you may not even recover, etc., might not be useful. And I think you'll see in some of the cases that Mr. Silo will then give details of that relate to those things. And I think we need, in the interest, and with the same principles that the BFMA is advancing, that we look at the value for money on what and everything we do, even in investigating this thing. I agree with the issue of action and consequences. That is the culture we are inculcating in the department. When we discover things now, we pursue them and we take appropriate actions against all the affected people without exception. I think that is linked to the area that I dealt with regard to whistleblower protection. I think if we need to constantly communicate the message that we will support whistleblowing appropriately done, and we will get people to understand what are the things that you do and what are the things you don't do, so that we are always in compliance with the law in that regard. The Minister dealt with the issue of the declaration. I think in the current year, because we have had to manage the process of compliance, substantive compliance, Chair, with the declarations. The report I had was that those that are present in the department have declared. It's another thing to look at the quality of the declaration, which is, I think, what PSC is now beginning to work on, to then say declaration is not enough. Follow up and check if this declaration is correct, honest, and whether in fact in some cases it does not amount to real conflict of interest. And that is one part that that is the next phase that I think with Public Service Commission we have to deal with. I think the cases that I know that have not been possible to declare is where people are in suspension on suspension. Some of them have been on suspension for quite some time, for good reasons, not present in the department physically. And I think to the extent people are dismissed, they are not going to be counted as part of the people who could have declared because they are dismissed. I think that is between April and now. But just in case if there has been anyone missed, anyone who, when we finalize the issue of analyzing that, was either missed, not declared properly, or has not declared, we'll start with the ones who have not declared and take action against them. Certainly we will. I think the legal advisor sitting next to me will touch on the specific cases that in law are disclosable and provide the outstanding details that relate to those cases. He's going to do that. I think I'm going to give him after I have finished my response. The settlement raised with the CFO, I think there were reference to the slides that were providing information from AG about the comments on this. I'm not going to deal with them. I have acknowledged that I too, in discussion with the unit, in analyzing the matters, have expressed my dissatisfaction with progress, and I've understood some of the reasons, and I think the issue I've dealt with is to devise a strategy that then make sure that we get the best out of it in the current, including that. I'm not going to go through all of the chair with your permission. I think the issue of the recovery strategy, the 28 million, he's going to address it. I think there was a question of the recovery strategy itself, as well as what happened to the people who were involved. The employees who were involved were disciplined. And I think in the court there is a reference to cases where somebody resigned and another one was fired to the federal. And it's in the court already. I think I must apologize for the missing dates, appropriate, for some of the cases. I think we do have the dates that later when we handed over things to the case numbers, etc. I think we can, if necessary, provide them to the chair at a later stage after today. But I think we do have the dates. The tricky part, Chair, which I must honestly accept, is that there are guidelines that are beginning to emerge around how long it should take to do an investigation, how long it should take to process the disciplinary action. I would be interested to see how many departments are able to comply fully with that in the current labor relations environment. I mean, with one of the directors that he's going to refer to, I do not know how many times there have been stoppages, legal stoppages. And lawyers tell you, you can't, if they have a basis and the chair makes the ruling, then you can't. Medical certificates are issued, all sorts of things. It's tough, Chair. You would be punishing yourself to think that you can determine that performance standard. It is one of the things that need to be dealt with structurally by the appropriate departments to see how we deal with some of this. But then you need to be patient in those cases if you want to achieve what you want to achieve. Because any rushing of those things can be challenged at appeal. And I've seen it in one of the other departments I dealt with where a clean case was dismissed and somewhere in the PSC appeal process reinstated. If not careful, that those are the realities. So I apologize for the bits and we will provide that. I think I'm going to give to the legal advisor to take us through the specific cases so that the members can be
updated with regard to specifics. Thanks.
Mr. Nasiru, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Miss. I always deal with Mr. Chair. I apologize. Let me start by the... unfortunately brought up one. Let me start by the matter relating to the conflict of interest. The impression that has been created from the slide was that it's 4 times 1% times 4. It's in fact written warnings that are given 4 people, different cases. This matter deals with the SRM providers with a record indicating that 25 DPW employees have been found to be having business interests outside their employment, and others have been doing business with the department. 20 of them are no longer with the department, and this SIU recommended that they be disciplined. We looked at the report, we looked at the merits of each and every case, hence we advised the DG to issue them with written warnings. Because we looked at the circumstances, the facts, and also the amounts that are involved. For example, we have Mr. MP Manager from Bloemfontein region, who was paid 3,350 rand. He doesn't have business. The fact of the matter is that he's got a bike, a very low-level employee, and some person, new person came to be employed, and he assisted to transport the clothes and for this person. And he claimed for the department, when the AG did the audit, they found that it was paid, and the payment, 3,350, was for transport, his private transport doing this, and that was obviously classified doing business with the department. And when you look at a case like that, the person being employed in the department for 20 years, and look at the seriousness of the health, we advise that you give this person a written warning. It's not a case where there was serious fraud and corruption. Others release it's like 5,853, 1,900. And the facts of the matter, we look at them, these are matters that we have to apply corrective measures instead of punitive measures. Now, the case that lease agreement, SAPS, with Wushabangu, that matter, remember, the department did not pay any cent. However, we applied to court to declare the lease agreement invalid. At the same time, NetBank is suing the department for loss of income. Remember, had this lease been signed and implemented, the department would have paid close to 800 million. In rentals, and now NetBank is claiming suing the department for that loss of income because in their agreement with Mr. Wushabangu, he had also used the rental as a surety. So if I fail to pay, you can have a lease that is guaranteed from Public Works of 800 million. So they're also suing us for that. The matter is we have defended and the matter is still before court. The issue that relates to the suspension of the DG, it was relating to DG Dongwan. That is the matter, that is the person that we're dealing with. The second matter about the suspension of the acting DG, who was found guilty and dismissed, we're referring to Mr. Vukela. His disciplinary hearing and charges were in relation to the procurement of that SAPS lease with Wushabangu. There's another matter of the head of property management who has been disciplined and we're awaiting the outcome of disciplinary hearing. That's Mr. Mashiani. Mr. Gode Mashiani. And the charges relate to lease agreements procured without complying with the supply chain policy, failure to disclose private dealings or knowledge of dealers who eventually receive contracts. It's related to fraud and forgery. And the other matter is the DDG that it was referred to is Mr. Rashad Samuel. This employee was also charged, amongst others, for failing to disclose private dealings with service providers, for receiving monies ranging from 50,000 to 120,000 from service providers, and as payments for fees for his children at the university, and failing to disclose such benefits and influencing the appointment of such service providers. The other employees is Mr. Mwahi and Mr. Simamani, who are project managers dealing with leases in the Johannesburg office, Bloemfontein. They were charged, their charges are in relation to the 21 leases that were provided. These officials, as indicated, Mr. Mwafi was disciplined and dismissed. Mr. Simamane resigned. And on the 20, a criminal case was reported and opened. On the 23rd of July, he was arrested together with the landlord. They are out on bail, the landlord of 10,000 and Mr. Simamane of 5,000. The case against Mr. Mwafi, the police are still investigating. They are making some final investigations. He might be arrested. So, as Didi indicated, we can provide case numbers. We have them. So their charges are related to corruption, stuff like that. They had received some, lost a lot of money from the landlord, 285,000, 536,000, 600,000 cars, Nissan Double F, the other one called 5 GTI, and stuff like that. The former CFO, the minister, has dealt with the matter, and now there's also a recovery of the 28 million against the landlord. It's in relation to 6 leases where the department was paying for leases for buildings that were never occupied. So what will happen, the two project managers will enter into an agreement with the landlord, knowing that this, there's not even a request for such. And when the SI investigated, they will go to a building and they find the buildings unoccupied, or in fact the building is a post office, but money has been paid to the landlord. So 28 million has been paid. We instructed our team, they finalized the summonses against the landlord and the process. We waiting for them to respond, and then we'll be waiting for a date for this case to be heard. There's another case of fronting that DJ referred to. This case relates to Mr. Shabangu also, where he fronted the building. The case is Public Works versus Majestic. Majestic is one of the companies that were owned by Mr. Shabangu before he resigned from the company. The building was owned 100% by Mr. Panikiak, who's white and who could not qualify in terms of our policies that we can list. What happened is that Mr. Shabangu fronted and pretended to be the owner of the building, signed a lease agreement to the department, basically committing fraud, say you are the owner of the building, not knowing. So the investigation revealed that there was fronting, and he was paid a lump sum of money in return to that. And later, Mr. Van Nickel's company took over the lease. A criminal case of fraud, corruption and funding has been referred to the SATS, and also we have taken the matter to court, where we applied for the court to declare this lease invalid because of, firstly, the procurement processes were not followed, secondly, the issue of funding and corruption that was involved in the matter. The difficulty of this matter is that we have departments already occupying that building. And as per legal advice, we wanted to get the department out of that building. However, legal advice was that let's wait for the court to declare it invalid. And also there might be a difficulty in claiming back that money because the building is occupied, we are enjoying the occupation. However, it was a case of a matter of principle that where procurement was not followed, where issues of corruption arise, that we go to court, we declare this invalid, so that we can set our own internal precedent as far as dealing with these cases are concerned. There's another matter of a deputy director dealing with leases, Ms. Motlaesi Bela Tolani. This employee was suspended, charged, and appeared before a additional hearing. The matter is completed. And we are waiting for the report of the chairperson of the disciplinary hearing. Her charges relate to the same case of Ruth Shabangu, where she was basically involved in preparing some submissions that were seen to have been clearly misleading the BID committee, and also having found to have allegedly destroyed documents was seen destroying documents that were later seen to be critical documents trying to cover up for someone who was involved in corruption. In all these matters, we referred matters to the SNPS. Then there's a matter of the prestige renovation of seven ministerial houses. The FIU finalized an investigation on the prestige unit. The report details the irregularities in the appointment of contractors in renovating the houses for new ministers and deputy ministers after the cabinet was expanded by the president, and he recommended that we discipline, take disciplinary steps against three employees. The charge relates to irregular appointment of contractors, authorizing payments of inflated invoices, and failure to report deviation to the Auditor General. In this case, we found that approximately $4.7 million was paid without supporting documents. Bills of quantities were excessively inflated and fraudulent claims were made. In this case, Ms. Nolo Eason Duana, Director Prestige, has been charged. She appeared before the disciplinary hearing and it was postponed for the first week of September this year. And the charges are in relation to this matter. The other two employees, we looked at the report and the allegations against them and the findings by the SIU against them are related to misconduct that of less serious nature. And hence we started with the one that is more serious than the others. We will communicate to the DG as to the steps to take against these two employees. Also in this matter, criminal cases have been referred and they are still being investigated. And there's a matter of Skipper border post. As you know, around 2010, before the World Cup, there was some work that has been done in different border posts. We received a forensic investigation conducted by the SIU on this border post. There was a proposed construction of Skelpad border post. The contract was cancelled after it transpired that the area was not suitable for construction. However, a settlement amount was irregularly paid to a contractor, which resulted in the overpayment of $33 million. And there was also an issue of conflict of interest by the then acting Director General, Mr. Soli Malile. What we have done in this matter, because Mr. Malile is no more of the department, we don't have jurisdiction over him, so we can't discipline him. We have issued summons against the contractor, Vela Panda. It's not the Panda of the former minister, but again, former acting director general, and we're claiming the amount of $50 million. Criminal case also has been referred to of fraud and corruption. As I indicated, there was some evidence of conflict of interest because after the matter was settled, a subcontractor who received some money, also there's movement of money from the subcontractor to the acting DG, who was the wife, hence the opening of a criminal case. I dealt with the issue of the conflict of interest with 25 cases, and then the Umtata Water Discharge Project, 8 criminal cases have been opened against the contractors. Basically, here it's in the rural areas where contractors are invited to deliver water in different to the police station clinics. What the SIU did, they did a forensic and they found out that people were exaggerating their claims. You find in one police station a tank, a 20-liter tank, for example, but this person claims 100 liters. So you give out water that is more than even the capacity of what they say. Others will show that they've delivered in one day in 5 places. But when you look at the radius of that place, it's like 1,000 kilometers. So you can only travel this distance over a period of, with a truck, 24 hours. So when you look at the claims and you look at it shows a lot of fraud and corruption. And the bottom, what do you call it? It's a recent report that we received from the SIU after a whistleblower gave information. that there's some, I can't mention the name of this person because we have not started this now hearing. We have just written a letter to her, giving her, confronting her with the allegation and requesting her to make representation as to what happened in the matter. But basically what happened, this employee is working in the finance department. The complaint was that she has an improper relationship with one suspected company, Autumn Star, and that SIU investigated and they found that there's movement of money from Autumn Star account into her personal account. Movement like the 10,000 that was paid, and also shows that she also received the refrigerators per payment and 15,000. So that is the case in relation to things like that. However, the investigation is still continuing. SIU wants to investigate to see whether all the payments that were received by Autumn Star were genuine payments. Why would they pay a person in their finance if they don't get anything in return? So they are looking into that. So these are some of the details of completed cases that we reported. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Masilu. Honorable Rhea?
Madam Chair, yes, just a quick follow-up. First of all, I want to thank the member for giving us all these details, a very thorough presentation. I appreciate that. That's exactly what we wanted. But could we ask for a copy of all those details? It was difficult to write everything down, but we need that. We could have a copy. And then I want to make a proposal. You know, it became clear that there are some cases that may have been outstanding for the last 5 years, but they are fairly small or fairly junior officials who made bona fide mistakes. He gave us one or two examples. And like with the situation, you sometimes write off bad debt because it's no longer cost-effective to try and pursue debt that you never going to get. You write it off, and then you move on and you look at the bigger one. If you shouldn't consider something similar here, when it's really a minor offense, long time ago, a fairly junior official considered kind of like bad debt, and then pursue with everything that you want, the big ones, the more senior officials and management, where it's clear they were enriching themselves. That you can actually pursue that. And then we would also get a more realistic figure of what are active cases, current cases, and then we can get rid of those other who are actually just kind of messing up the books or filling up space that are actually not relevant. So that's what it is on here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Nagrapa?
No, thanks, Honourable Chair. Thank you very much for the department. We appreciate the chair that you are really transparent together with the Minister and Deputy Minister, all the time you give us information and we are honest to us. This is what our chair always requests to the department, the honesty. So we appreciate this report and the details that you are giving to us because the Minister did indicate that when they are finished with some of the investigation, you present the report and this is what's happening. So, but on the issue of writing of the debt, the debt that you can't pay soon. I think there should be a policy dealing with the issue of writing off some of the debt that you can't really pay soon and doesn't make sense. Maybe, although we are vocal, you know that we are vocal about this issue of fraud and corruption as a portfolio committee, one justice being done for our communities out there. Those people that are really engaged in a corrupt practices, I think this is the correct way that we are dealing with them. We appreciate. But maybe, as Honorable Breyer is indicating, that these Molanyana fraud cases, really, we can't track. We must focus on what matters most, you know. I think we support that one, as you indicated, DT, that you look at them, and at some stage, you must write off. If you can just look at that one and have. But on the issue of the panel, Honorable Chair, my concern, Honorable Chair, is the fact that we may have duplication if we are not careful about the terms of reference of the fraud awareness and investigation, internal audit and investigation services under Chief Directorate, because they are dealing with investigations also. And then also we are hiring the others on the other hand. Maybe if you can, I know that you want to track the backdoor because we are also having a concern. Maybe if it can have a clear terms of reference to say who is dealing with what, because at the end of the day you will find that duplication of the work. Maybe it will assist us to understand exactly a different terms of reference to say how different is that panel of service providers to this directorate that deals with internal audit and investigations.
Thank you. Banyana Vila.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to comment on the issue of the payment of the contractor that was delivering water in schools and maybe clinics. Because according to my understanding, if you deliver water, there should be someone who must just sign, you know, to agree that on that day we're there to deliver water. So I don't know how do they claim. Do they write these things alone, or someone in that institution where water has been delivered has just signed for it? Because if that is the case, then on the other side, the person is claiming, while on the other side, the other one has signed while water has not been delivered to that particular institution. It means that if that particular person has signed, must be charged. Then the issue of the writing off of debt, I think there should be a reason, because you don't just write off the debt. Number one, you have tried maybe several times to recover, then you have failed. Number two, the person who's involved was supposed to, the person is supposed to recover from, maybe that person has died, then the family economic situation, you know, is not good for them to, you know, to repay. So if you're saying the family must pay, then you put the family in a in another position. But it's true that I think we need to have the policy so that we know exactly when you write off the debts that you have followed, you have complied to the policy that is that the department is using. Then the other one, we have rights to the information that you have presented to us. But while we are presenting, you have said there are other names in the report that you are supposed to tell us. So I don't know, because I think before you circulate that report, you need to make sure that the report that you're circulating to the committee doesn't have those names that you have said, yeah, you will not divulge them to us in this meeting, so that at the end of the day, you know, you don't put yourself into trouble. But also you've got the right to say no if that report is still, you know, the property, you are still within the department. There will be time where you're supposed maybe to present it, but the information that you have said you are not supposed to give it to us, I think you must take it out of that report. But the information that you've already given, I think it's the information that you must supply to us, so that at the end of the day, we are not saying the committee has leaked the information. We've given this committee and say this is confidential, only to find out the information is out. The information that is still confidential, keep it confidential, give us that, that you are supposed to give us.
Are you done? No one is.
Thanks. Mine is just a comment on the lease agreement in geographic region. You know, before there were flats in Hillbrook that used to be used by the, that belonged to the previous regime. And then they were used by the TPVC state officials when they were visiting Pretoria. There were quite a number of them in Pretoria, and when one wants to rent the flat, you are just given the account number. That this is the account number. You have to put your money in and then present the receipt. I think those flats are still there, and maybe some people are using them. People who have got the knowledge of them. Thank you.
Are you done? DG, will you please respond? Thank you, Chair. Can you please sit on your mic, DG? I actually left a question, a comment that was made around the figures. Yes, I think what we're doing today, we have given you the figures as of now. I will check out what is the deposit, what was recorded before. But certainly, I think we were commenting with the legal advisor here. One of the cases that we had to investigate, which is actually which is reaching conclusion, relates to a case that was raised about a system called SAS, which a former DG, I think Masayako, put in place but left the department before he finished implementing it. It was meant to actually, it was some sort of a report that would give me a cockpit information, like you, critical information on critical performance indicators of the department in his office and in each of the DGs when it was, after it would have been decentralized to those. Some problem existed, which the SIU investigated, and they have made a recommendation that they've evaluated the efficacy and the capabilities of that system. It's a good system, meant to do that, and I'm pursuing that, to actually have that capability, so that I think we shouldn't have disputes about information, we should have disputes about whether it's progress or not, and I think I will pursue that. If it is, I confirm that, I will be able to then take the next action and ensure that we implement it. We did pay for it, so we're not going to pay anymore. It just wasn't used at the time. And so I think that will address the issue that you have raised, Honorable. Then, yes, on the issue, I think I agree with the issue of making sure that we've got a solid policy in place to deal with these things. I think I appreciate the members' understanding of this, and because most of the time we're always scared that you might think that we are trying to cover up. And yet, pursuing some of the, not by the sheer number, will effectively render my office, the department, dysfunctional. You have to pursue 2,000 small cases in this environment of having to start with one case would effectively mean that I'm going to be in a department that is even more dysfunctional. So I think prioritization and the principles to be followed to ensure that we comply with PACHA requirements would be useful. I note the issue of a possible conflict of interest on the panel. I think we'll manage that with the team and the possible duplication. You'll deal with the balance of things. I think the comment of Johannesburg, we will record this and just pursue it and check if those flats as part of the asset register thing are still in register. And if they're not, we check why would the ownership change in those cases. But I've recorded that it must check in some of the geographical areas. The Hillbrow, the Pretoria, cases in Sunnyside, that's correct. Yes, yeah. I know that there was somewhat in the asset register around some of these areas. There are other properties that are questionable properties, which the minister at some stage did refer to. Questionable properties about how ownership changes occurred. Some may become part of a truth and reconciliation, what do you call it? The project truth and reconciliation, where people can come with documents and then we pursue them further if we are not satisfied with the documents. But there are, I think there's a number, about 1,000 of such cases that we will pursue. Operation Bring Back, yes. Because Operation Bring may bring things that are even not in the list that we know, that are not there. I think that will be that's part of that, the list, the asset reconstruction process. I think I think I've covered most of the things. Thank you. Do you want us to respond to one? Or the issue of the disclosure?
Yes. About disclosure of information, as you are aware that the presentation that was given did not have the details. We have kept the details in our bags, waiting for pressure. Then we list them. It was deliberate because these matters are seriously confidential. Others are pending in court, and they deal with people's names. Cases are continuing. This person might find not guilty in a scenario, and by mentioning his name or her name, it would be like casting aspersion already on a person, which would be unfair. However, we as part of being open and transparent, we share this information with you, Minister. The other issue of the water discharge problem, one official has been identified as a person who was working with these contractors. But as far as the schools and the police stations are concerned, there's nothing that was done. Those people, the principal is running the school, just want to make sure that water is delivered. It doesn't, it won't even count how many liters and stuff. That's not his or her core business. As long as water is available for kids, he or she is happy. The issue of problematic buildings, this is more informative, this is safe. SIU has done a lot of work in UMTAT, where they even entered into new lease agreements with people. People were renting out properties, staying there for 200 a month, accommodation, and most of them are civil servants, like for correctional service. They've been staying in public works buildings for a very long time. So we've entered into negotiating, and they must now pay market-related rentals. Others apparently were converted into B&Bs, old ministerial houses in the TV states. But these are some of the cases that we're following up. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Deputy Minister.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe to, I'm a politician and not a lawyer, unlike a previous speaker, but I think in future, one of the lessons, we shouldn't wait for pressure. There are names that can't be released publicly because that would compromise the cases, the incomplete cases, and so forth. But where we can say that there's a criminal charge against the name and what the criminal charge is, we're not finding persons guilty or otherwise, that's for a court to determine. But I think we shouldn't keep those names in the future, understand the spirit in which it was done. We shouldn't wait for pressure from yourself. We should name and shame, even if it's not yet fully shamed. I mean, they're on trial, for instance, or their cases. So I think that's a lesson we should learn out and so on. Secondly, I think we're in agreement that we need to prioritize when proceeding with cases, that we shouldn't throw huge amounts of resources and time on small cases to the detriment of dealing with current five cases with people who are still in senior positions, perhaps in the department. We need to prioritize. But I think in saying that, we must not give the impression that that small cases are unimportant. I think we must have a zero tolerance on fraud and corruption. I think that must be our attitude. How we deal with small cases, let's say, or long past cases, might be different. We might decide that, you know, it's a warning, for instance, and that we won't proceed with long proceedings. But I think it's very important to build a culture of non-tolerance, zero tolerance for fraud and corruption. And that's why I hope the advice that we're getting from the committee is prioritize and be intelligent in the way, strategic in the way in which you deal with the matter, but you're not telling us to write off. There was a bit of a thing. What you were saying is just as banks write off bad debt because it's just going to cost too much. You were saying what we're trying to suggest to us, I hope what you were trying to suggest to us is deal with it strategically. But don't ignore it. We must, otherwise you start to create a culture again of, well, it's, you know, under a certain amount or whatever, then fraud and corruption, stealing in the public sector, stealing from the public purse. And we've really got to, both as Parliament and as a department and ministry, have a zero tolerance approach. Nuanced and strategic, of course, and I think that's the lesson I'm taking. And then finally, I just think that the minister, I'm not sure how, he said he's coming back and his cell phone is here, but I'm sure that he would want on his behalf to thank the committee. You've all expressed appreciation for varying degrees of transparency. And we really do, I mean, this is a sincere statement, that we do really appreciate the support we get from the committee, but also the tough question. That's very, very important for us to be able to do our job, and I think that all of the interventions today were saying we acknowledge the progress that's been made, but it's not good enough. More needs to be done and so on, and the points are very much taken, as I think the DG and others have spoken. And then also just to say that in future, because I did intervene during the break, the documents that we are tabling are public documents in a public hearing, and therefore it's a pity that there weren't sufficient copies available for the media and for any other members of the public who are attending this portfolio committee. So I think in future we must make sure that there might be cases, hopefully never cases, in this particular committee where we have to meet in camera, in which case the documentation or whatever would be confidential. But overwhelmingly, we need to make Parliament a public space. And therefore, I think that's a bit of a lesson. In this case, it was a department. that was a parliamentary and a more portfolio committee issue. We supply the documentation, and we expect documentation to be made available through the parliamentary administrative staff to all those who are attending. I'm sure it's just a failure to print sufficient numbers and so on. Just to clarify that, and I think it's a lesson that we collectively need to learn, that we must be as transparent as possible, as public as possible in these hearings. But once again, express appreciation for the way in which the committee is keeping us on our toes in a multi-party way, so not in a factionless way. That's also important. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honourable members, I think we have come to the end of the meeting. And PG, I can see that all members are satisfied with your presentation and your honesty and your transparency to say we really appreciate this engagement. And once you see Honourable Dreher packing her things, and you know, you can see that she is satisfied. So I think everybody, once she's satisfied, Sotolo is also satisfied. All of us are satisfied. Thank you very much, DG. And Khalid Zah.